When it comes to the Old Testament, there are some names, certain names, which seem to stand out. Abraham, Isaac, Moses, Elijah, Saul, David, Solomon. And then we have that name Jacob that we talked about earlier this morning. Jacob, I think, is one of those characters who is somewhat familiar to us, but at the same time, he is, for whatever reason, mentioned a lot less often. Jacob, though, is someone who, as you look at his life, he is an important man. He's an important man for several reasons. This morning we looked at some of the things associated with Jacob. We want to look at him a second time this afternoon, but this time we want to take a much different direction with the like of Jacob. When you look at Jacob, you find that he is, along with a number of other people, someone who was a type of Christ. That is, Jacob and some of the events associated with his life, many, many years before Jesus came into the world, he and his life were pointing forward to what Jesus would do and the type of person that Jesus would be. You may remember one of the better-known stories about Jacob. At least in my mind, it's one of the better-known stories. It's a story about deception. In the Old Testament, the Bible tells us that there was a time where Jacob decided that he was going to dress up as Esau. This is when, of course, he wanted to seek the blessing. Jacob comes to his dad. Esau is out there in the field. Jacob pretends to be his brother Esau, and he seeks, on that occasion, the blessing from his father. Isaac may have been old, but Isaac was not stupid. Jacob's dad says to his son, "I want you to come closer so I can feel you." That's in Genesis chapter 27 and verse 21. And you get a reason for that in Genesis chapter 27 and verse 11. In Genesis 27 verse 11, the text says that Esau was a hairy man. Now, Jacob wasn't. And Isaac couldn't see very well, so you can imagine what he was thinking. I'm going to smell him and I'm going to feel him and see if I feel a lot of hair. Now, I can't help but think about that in conjunction with the time of year that we're now in. We have come to a time of year when a lot of people are going to dress up in costumes for Halloween. And as you think about the Halloween costumes that people don, it is the case that some try to drastically or maybe completely alter their appearance. Jacob is someone who on this occasion, he tries to dramatically change the appearance. As you go back and you look at the text, the Bible tells us that his arms were covered with the young skin of goats. And also his neck area, that was also covered. Jacob was also wearing Esau's favorite clothing. So Jacob, on this occasion, he dresses up, he smells like, he gets into Esau's skin about as much as anybody possibly could. Now, as you're reading through that, or maybe you're teaching that to a Bible class full of young people, and it's an exciting story. But have you ever stepped back? And have you ever wondered why God put all those details in there? I mean, why not just say he dressed up like Jacob in some of his clothing and move on? But rather than say that, the Bible has all these details, specific item after specific item after specific item. If we were studying this on our own, we should step back and say, why on earth do we have all these details? Why did God spend so much ink and time talking about this? Jacob playing dress up. What's the point? The point is that Jacob and the events as far as his dressing up and pretending to be Esau, they were pointing forward to something that was going to take place many, many years later. That item was Jesus coming into the world. In the book of John, John chapter 1 and verse 14, the text says that the Word, that's Jesus, he became flesh. Jesus comes into the world and in some respects he puts on our clothes. Not the literal clothes that we have. Not, we're not talking about pants and shirts and socks and shoes. But we're talking about he became flesh. He was much different than Jacob in that he didn't come to trick and deceive. But Jesus came to help and bless us. And for Jesus to accomplish his mission, he needed to come down to our level. He needed to put on our clothing. He needed to become a human being. So, as sometimes it's said when we have the Lord's Supper, we hear men here say that Jesus laid aside his glory, he laid aside the honor of heaven to come and live among men, and that is exactly right. Paul described this as Jesus humbling himself in Philippians chapter 2. The Galatian letter, Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4, the apostle Paul said, in the fullness of time, what did God do? He sent forth his son, born of a woman. Paul said that that was part of the great mystery of godliness. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16. And the Hebrew writer, whoever that was, in Hebrews chapter 2 verses 14 through 17, he says that Jesus was made a sharer in flesh and blood. All of that was foreshadowed by Jacob and his dressing up like Esau. John goes a little further in 2 John verse 7. He says, if you don't believe that Jesus has come in the flesh, if you don't believe that Jesus came to share in the human nature that we have, he says that's part of the Antichrist spirit. That's how important this information is. Yesterday, I read about a chaplain in the state of Texas. Now that in and of itself is probably not all that unusual. I don't know how many police chaplains there are in the U.S. I guess I could have tried to check that out. But there are many police chaplains. Dozens, probably hundreds, maybe even 1,000 or more. But this chaplain is distinctive. You see, this chaplain wanted to be able to empathize and sympathize with the officers that he was going to be riding with. He wanted to know what it feels like to be a cop. So you know what this police chaplain did? He attended the police academy. 22 weeks. The 22-week training that a police officer would normally take, that's what this guy goes through. Not to become a cop, but to simply say, I want to become a chaplain. I want to help you. I want to work with you. I want to serve you. And to help me understand what you go through, I'm going to experience the very same training that you've gone through. Wow. I was impressed. And then as I was looking at some other information, I came across something else. Similar point. I was unaware of the fact that there are AGE suits. Now, if you've never heard of an age suit, you may want to look that up. It's really kind of a fascinating thing. These are suits which, I don't know how long they've been out, apparently at least for a couple years. These are suits which are donned, which are put on by healthcare workers. And the purpose of the suit is to help that healthcare worker have a better understanding of the sick people that they work with. The people who have worn these suits have said it'll age you 40 years. Now, that's not literally true, but it will make you feel like you are 40 years older than you really are. When you start walking, you'll feel what it's like, you know, to walk maybe at 80 or 90. And when you start hearing, these suits will interfere with your hearing. When it feels like you have to do something with your hands, these suits will feel like or help you feel like an old person. When we see Jacob dressed up, it's more than a story. It is a way of saying that someone else was going to come at a later time, a very special person. And he was going to be robed in flesh, Jesus Christ, the trickster. The huckster, that sneaky guy by the name of Jacob, pointed to the one, the true one, who was going to come and later be the Savior. Now, I've mentioned the blessing from Isaac a few times. Now, I want to go back, Genesis chapter 27 and verse 29. Now, I want to go back and read part of that blessing. We know that he was able to get the birthright because of the bowl of pottage. But now, let's go back and look at the blessing, which was pronounced by his father, Isaac. And as I read this blessing from Genesis chapter 27 and 29, consider how comprehensive and how distinctive it is. 27:29. Let peoples, plural, serve thee, and nations, plural, bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brothers, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be everyone that blesseth thee. Now that blessing from a dad is a pretty powerful, a pretty impressive blessing. In fact, as you look at the words in Genesis 27 and verse 29, it almost sounds like they could be associated with deity. And that's right. You see, in God's wisdom, in his power, in his providence, these words which were spoken from Isaac to his son Jacob, should have been spoken to Esau, but these words which were spoken to Jacob, they ultimately look forward to the Messiah. Now, we know that Jesus was part of Jacob's family, Matthew chapter 1 and verse 1. And the ultimate fulfillment of the blessing in Genesis 27 and verse 29 is applied to Jesus Christ. All nations are to bow before the Lord. Those who want to curse Jesus, and there are some who do, will be cursed. It is right for the peoples, plural, around the earth to serve Jesus because he is both Lord and Christ. As we think about Jacob, let's go back for a moment. Let's think back to a moment to consider what was said in the earlier study. We noticed as we considered Jacob's life how he angered his brother Esau, and Esau had that desire to kill his brother. It was for that reason that he needs to go see Laban in Haran. This is also another important part of Jacob's life, but it's also a part of Jacob's life which again points to Jesus. As Jesus' ministry progressed, and it did, picked up steam, there were many of the common people who appreciated the Lord for what he did. Healed people, provided food, the Lord did a number of good things. But you know, we also find as we look at Jesus' ministry that there were several people who, for various reasons, they decided not to stick with him. They received their help, they got their food, they received their miracle, and then they decided that they were going to hit the bricks and never seen from again. In our time, we still have that same issue. There are some people who come for the freebies. There are some people who come for what they can get, and we never see them again. That's not a new problem. Jesus himself had that issue. If the Son of God had some people who were only interested in freebies, we likely are also going to have that very same problem. And as Jesus' ministry continues, he's given away some things, some food, and he's given away some healings and helped people in various ways, the Lord begins to develop some enemies. And not just some enemies, but he develops some mortal enemies. There are some people, several, who want to kill him. The desire that Esau had to kill Jacob ultimately pointed forward to the hatred that Jesus experienced. We remember from the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 53 and verse 3, that Jesus was rejected of men, a man who was acquainted with sorrows, foreshadowed by Esau and certainly fulfilled in many ways in the Lord's life. People turn their backs on the Messiah. So Jacob, he has kind of a roller coaster life. We talked about that this morning, up and down, back and forth. Jacob had that. So did Jesus, though, for different reasons. If you were to look at the last book in the Old Testament, the book of Malachi, you don't have to read very far. You get into the first chapter, and it's Malachi chapter 1 and verse 2. You find there a somewhat unusual verse. It's a verse which has puzzled some people sometimes. And it's here that God says, I love Jacob, but I hated Esau. And somebody says, well, how can God hate anybody? I love Jacob, but I hated Esau. Well, Jacob was loved in the sense that he was the one chosen by God. Esau was hated in the sense that he was not the one who was chosen by God. Have you ever thought what the Messiah would be like had he been like Esau? What would the Messiah have been like had he been like Esau? Wouldn't have been a good arrangement. Wouldn't be what we needed. We needed someone who would be like Jacob in many respects. Jacob had the qualities that God could work with. Now, as we laid out this morning, earlier, Jacob had some things that he had to work out. There were a number of things that he finally had to figure out in his life, and finally, thankfully, he got on the right road. But Jacob was loved by God, Malachi 1 and verse 2. Why make that statement? Well, once again, what was Jacob doing in his life? He was pointing forward in many respects to Jesus. What do we find? Jesus was loved by the Father, the only beloved Son. It may not be one of the verses we generally remember about Jacob, but in Genesis chapter 31 and verse 54, and I'm not going to read that, but I am going to be turning to John chapter 1 and verse 51 and reading that in just a bit. But in Genesis chapter 31 and verse 54, we have this man, Jacob, offering a sacrifice. And he's inviting people to what might be called a covenant feast. As you are reading through the book of Genesis, it's very easy to look at that text and pass almost right by it. Priests, of course, were the people who were generally designed to offer sacrifices. Moses' law was not yet in effect, but priests were the people who typically offered sacrifices. And on this occasion, Jacob offers this sacrifice, and he's inviting to people what might be called a covenant feast. Well, again, why do that? Why slip that small detail into the text? Well, the answer has already been given. In many respects, he was someone who pointed forward to Jesus and what Jesus was going to do. Jesus and Jacob go together just like many other Old Testament characters and just like many Old Testament events. Now, thinking about Jacob, one of the events that's also well known, often recalled about his life, is that ladder that we talked about this morning. And we use that ladder this morning to say God was heading them in the right direction. That is, you need to get away from thinking about self. You need to start focusing on me and see how I can help you and let me be in charge of your life. Many years later, we come to Jesus, John chapter 1. And in John chapter 1, we not only come to Jesus, but we go back to that ladder in Jacob's life. Jesus said this, that final verse in John 1. And he saith unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye shall see the heaven opened, and the angels of God descending and descending, not upon a ladder, but see them descending upon the Son of God. In John 1:51, Jesus affirmed that he is the ladder. Time after time, we can begin to see how the Old Testament is somehow related to the New Testament, or how events or people in the Old Testament point forward to the New. Now somebody says, well, that's interesting. You've done some lessons on that before, and I can see a number of parallels with Jacob, but in the end, how does that help me? How is that relevant to my life? What does it matter? It matters in this way. It shows us that our God, the God that we have decided to serve, has a master plan. And the God that we serve is someone who is able to bring everything together. The God that we serve is never someone who forgets something. He's never someone who overlooks something. He's never someone who leaves something out or there's something that eventually needs to be corrected. It is easy for us at some time in life. Maybe it's a small thing. Maybe it's a big thing. But it's easy for us in life to look at God and think, well, I'm not sure that God was as mindful of this as he should have been. We may wonder, for example, how God is going to do this or that in eternity. A couple examples. Someone may say, well, all the dead, different things have happened to them. Bodies have deteriorated. And how is God going to raise all those people up in eternity? Or someone frames it this way. In eternity, not everybody is going to be saved. Some loved ones of the saved are not going to be with them. And how is God going to be able to eliminate that grief? Forever and ever, how will God keep people from being sad? Will not the saved think about the lost family members? How can God help me in my daily life if the age of the miraculous has passed? Well, that's not a new thing. The Corinthians, as we see from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, they were thinking along those same lines. How is God going to do this? How is God going to be able to do that? We're not understanding how God can accomplish all these things. And you know what Paul's answer to the Corinthians was? God has this stuff under control. You may have all kinds of questions, and Paul said, I understand that. But I need you to realize, I need you to understand that God has covered all these things. And there's no reason for you to be concerned. When we go back and we start seeing how God was using Jacob in a number of ways to point to things that would be done many years later or associated many years later with his son, the Son of God. Or we see other characters like Moses, and we see other characters like Samuel and Elijah. We've got to stand back and we've got to say, God, you really do have things, all things in hand. You are the God who has all things covered. Nothing is undone. Nothing needs tidied up. Nothing needs forgotten. We cannot come up with something that you have somehow failed to overlook. Now, how you do that, God, it is beyond us. It's beyond me. It's beyond each one of us. But we will do what you've said because we've got confidence in you. We will live by faith. Jacob's life presents us with two of the most important points when it comes to the Christian life. Point number one was seen in the earlier lesson. God said, you need to humble yourself. Strip away the pride. You need to see that you have to depend on me if you really want to have a good life. Well, that makes sense now. Because God says, look, I've got it all under control, and you need to realize that I'm the one who can keep you straight and help you. And then lesson number two is what we see now. And that is, God says you need to walk by faith. I've got the power. I've got the interest. I've got the ability to do all the things that you need done. You just have to trust me day by day. That's tough. And yet that is the message of the Bible in the Old Testament and the New. The just shall live by faith. God says, I have it covered. If you're willing to believe that, and you're willing to live that life of faith every single day, we'll walk hand in hand as we think about, or as we sing about from time to time. And God says, I'll see you safely through life and into eternity. If not, then we're back to the problem that we talked about earlier. We're back to the life of Jacob, where I've got to figure it out on my own. I've got to come up with the schemes, the plans, and I've got to use my own strength, my own resources to get through life. That's a failing way to live. Walk by faith. Every single day. Is that where we are as a Christian? We've reached out our hand and said, God, I believe you've got it all covered. And I'll walk with you every single day by faith. I can't always see what you're doing. Can't always understand how it's going to work out. But I hold out my hand in faith every single day. It's by faith that we believe. Don't have a personal encounter with Christ. We can't see him. It's by faith that we repent. By faith we confess that Christ is the Son of God. It's by faith that we're baptized into Christ. It's by faith that we believe every single sin is forgiven. And it's by faith that we're to walk with God every single day. Are we walking by faith now? And is that the way that we've pledged to live our life every single day? If not, and this afternoon we can help you head back on the right road or help you start that journey, will you let us know what we can do to assist you as we stand and sing the selected song?